Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later in the program, Rob DeWalt will be with us, speaking of the arts. Right now, I'd like to welcome Salvatore Schibona. He is author of the novel The End. He is a St. John's graduate. He is in town doing various things at St. John's College. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you recently had a short essay in The New Yorker called Where I Learned to Read.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of, I mean, it made it sound like you were a poor child from nowhere who could barely spell. But you were kind of, it sounds from the article, like really about to pursue a management career at Kentucky Fried Chicken. And then you heard about St. John's.
It was something like that. I could certainly spell, and you know, I make it plain in the essay that I did read, and reading before I had heard of St. John's, before I came to New Mexico from Ohio. That's where I grew up. It did this weird thing to my mind that I had no way of really explaining to myself. I didn't come from a reading culture, really. There was a public library in my town, and I would walk through the shelves and look for the name of an author that I had heard of. So I got like a Faulkner book off the library shelf. But, in any case, I was really flunking out of high school. I mean, I flunked something. At one point, I flunked 4 classes in 1 semester, just because I was a dope. I just didn't know how to get work done, I really loved to read. And then I heard from a classmate about a friend of mine from in homeroom, literally like turned around and said, I heard about this college where they claim that they're not terribly interested in your high school grades, but they want to know what you have to say in your essays. And I thought, maybe there's some hope. And then my life kind of turned upside down.
So what was it like for you to be suddenly involved in this great books curriculum? And for those of our listeners who don't really know much about St. College, it really is a curriculum where you read from, what, 65 books, is it now, something like that?
No, it's more than 100.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, the undergraduate program is a lot. It's
a lot, 100. It's still not a lot of books.
Yeah. They're hard books. The program is all required, and the undergraduate program starts with Homer and plods over 4 years, nearly to the present. And the goal of the program is to give the student an opportunity to have a liberal arts education, which is not terribly uncommon in American universities, but I think most importantly, to do it by the reading of original texts. And I think the history of that comes from a sort of a movement away from the reading of original texts about 100 years ago, and then when the St. John's campus in Annapolis, the mother campus, moved to the Great Books program in the 1930s. It was really sort of a radical idea that people should be reading. You could take a young person and teach him to read Aristotle rather than books about Aristotle.
Right.
And he could read books about Aristotle after. And it's still to this day, it seems, I mean, I think St. John's is a very peculiar education, and I would not recommend it to the majority of the people that I know. But it is really, really an extraordinary life-forming event for a particular kind of student. And I think for me, for that kind of student, one of the things that distinguishes that kind of student is a desire to get to ground. Do you know what I mean?
What do you mean by that?
I mean a suspicion of received understanding when original understanding is right there on the shelf. all you have to do is take it down and read it.
Well, that's the thing about reading only the texts is, and not something.
By the way, I want to say, reading secondary texts later is great. I mean, St. John's is not the whole world. It's,
yeah, but way it's later. I mean, the thing, mm-hmm. I went there many years ago when I first moved to Santa Fe in the Graduate Institute, which is basically the same curriculum, although not quite as many books, because you're not there for as many weeks total. But there is something about taking a text that is, in many ways, just beyond your comprehension. And you may be 18, and you may be 35, and you may be 65.
Yes.
Whatever age you are, you're confronting this, and you're confronting it first by yourself. You read it once or twice. Then in a group with other people who are struggling as much as you are, to a greater or lesser extent, and going until you actually get somewhere. And that journey of the seminar, the preceptorial, whatever it is, the class, is... you don't know where it's going to end up, and it often ends up in a pretty deep place.
Oh, very much so, and I think, but I have to say, I want to say about what you're talking about, basically getting in over your head, you know, reading books that you don't really know how to read. My experience of St. John's was of being asked to do, being assigned a little bit more than I could possibly do well. All the time, and what was really amazing is how by being sort of compelled to stretch so consistently, by the time you're a junior, you know, you could do the freshman work at least in terms of the reading and the writing, and so you could do it pretty easily, even though there would be, you know, there are great depths inside the books that you hadn't touched, but I think the sort of there are things about which St. John's is not rigorous. It's not, there are no written tests, so it doesn't demand that you memorize data that you have to be responsible for. The things that it is rigorous about, however, to me were vastly more important. I had to, as you say, I had to read books that were just beyond the edge of my understanding. And in a way, and tolerate that ambiguity. That, you know, this sort of psychoanalytic notion that, like, that emotional intelligence is the toleration of ambiguity. It necessitates the toleration of ambiguity. And St. John's students are reading extraordinarily clear and difficult texts. They're not really texts that are striving to be ambiguous, but the student's ability to get that far, to read something that's this hard, puts the student constantly in this insecure place. And in my experience with my fellow classmates, like we got done with that program feeling like, yeah, we could read whatever we wanted to read.
Right, exactly. And you're tolerating ambiguity, tolerating, as you put it, insecurity, and there is a kind of humility with that.
Absolutely.
I think, where you know that you're not, no matter how clever you are, A, you're not that clever, and B, cleverness is not what it's all
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. You know what, Mary Charlotte, that is so right. That was like, I this sounds like a post facto kind of observation, but I swear it actually happened. At some point in junior year, I realized that I had not had, in a year and a half, maybe two, I mean, somewhere in freshman year, I had not had a single conversation with another student about how smart another student was.
Right.
It was, which is, you know, in high school and in lots of other places and people that I knew in colleges from, you know, and other places, it was like, you know, there was a level of competition, that was healthy. I'm not saying that it wasn't healthy, but there was no, but the currency of the conversation was not how slick and how rhetorically sophisticated you were. It was something deeper. I mean, I think the cliche at St. John's was just that it was the ability to ask good questions. You know, eventually, I found myself really profoundly envious of, you know, most of the people in my class, because almost all of them were able to see into the mystery of books that had escaped me. And I'm really not, I really mean that sincerely. I mean, I really mean that we just didn't talk about whether somebody was smart. We talked about what they were doing with what they had read.
And this whole question of what they were doing, what they had read, making that part of your daily life, it's intense. I remember, again, I was only there in the summers, but we were in these little rooms that were kind of like monastic cells.
Yeah.
They're little white cinder block rooms, most of them singles, a few of them doubles.
Talking about the dormitory rooms.
The dormitories.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody had exactly the same thing, a bed, a desk, and a closet. And we ate together at the same times every day, and we read together, and there was this kind of humbling experience and sometimes really enthralling experience of reading together. And it felt like probably the closest thing to monasticism, even though in shorter periods, that any of us was going to get
in the course
of our life.
One thinks of, you think of monastic, for some reason people often associate monasticism with solitude. The monks live in monasteries with each other, you know?
Exactly.
St. John students, by the way, are not monks by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, they're involved in the search and rescue service with the National Forestry Service, and they're, and, you know, they do work in the community, they have jobs in the community.
Haven't taken a vow of celibacy.
They have not taken a vow of celibacy, I can attest. They socialize, they dance. They have chosen, you know, there's this great, I forget where this comes from, there's an Emerson essay in which his advice to the young. It is one paragraph, one of those beautiful Emersonian encapsulations
Quotable, right.
of everything that you ever need to know. And part of it was his insistence that we must find the society of our contemporaries, by which I think he means not just the people that we're living with in this time, but the people that we really need to know for our own intellectual and, you know, creative, philosophical growth. And that was probably the most significant thing that St. John's did for me, the most clear distinction that I could trace in retrospect, is that before I got there, I had no friends, really. I mean, a lot of teenagers feel isolated, and I was not special in that way. But once I was there, I mean, I had found my tribe.
Yeah, like exactly.
I learned how to be a practical and also an intellectual and emotional companion to people who shared my interests, you know. And then from there also, I learned how to do that with people who didn't necessarily share my interests.
Once you get out of St. John's, of course,
it's like yoga for the mind. It's like a 4-year intense yoga program for the mind.
Right.
I mean, all of these joints, all of these muscles in your mind, you don't think of as being that flexible. Just become more and more and more and more flexible until you really feel you can. As I say, you feel you can read anything, you can talk to anyone,
and you can ask a lot of questions. And the whole question of what do you do when you get out. There's almost a kind of belligerent attitude that some people have toward liberal arts students, and particularly people who do only a great books program. Mm-hmm. Like, well, what are you going to do with that?
I had a relative before I went to St. John's who said you can't eat a liberal education, and
you can't really eat business either.
No, I mean, you know what? I'll just tell you, but people from my class, this is what we're doing. So I'm a fiction writer. One of us became a sheep farmer. One of us is an organic farmer and then went into nursing. One of us became a neuroscience PhD researcher at Columbia. One of them is a theoretical physicist at the University of Chicago. One of them is a computer engineer. Several of them are lawyers. One of them is a professor of political science. those are the people that I'm in touch with. You know what I mean?
So they did okay.
They did okay. I'm not just saying that they did okay. They did wildly diverse things.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, all of them are immensely grateful for the opportunity to get an education that prepared them for such different things. And by the way, I think the most important argument against this, the contempt for liberal education because it isn't vocational enough. By the way, what a disuse of the word vocation. I mean, a vocation is a calling, and people are called to read like they're called to do anything else. But to me, the soundest argument against that kind of thinking is that Americans are changing careers 3 or 4 times in a lifetime now. And someone coming into a undergrad education now, God knows how much they're going to have to change. You get an education in some extraordinarily technical and precise field of science, and as an undergraduate, you have blown your last opportunity to diversify your mind and your field of competence and interest. In our system, the American system, except for maybe for the St. John's College Graduate Institute, there really are no opportunities to be a generalist after college.
Right.
You're going to specialize forever after this. I don't understand why you would want to blow it.
Especially when your mind is that ripe for, of course, your mind can be ripe at any time over the course of your life,
but especially when you're young.
I remember at the time that I went to the Graduate Institute, I was reading a lot of newspapers and magazines and trying to understand the political system that we lived in, and I found it completely opaque. And then when I went to St. John's, I realized that it had a history. They were arguing about the same things in Congress now that they were arguing about in the 18th century.
Absolutely.
And probably in the second century or second millennium BC, whatever. It goes... The same arguments and the way people line up, even just the terms liberal and conservative, they have this long history, and to get to the root of that is very important.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And, you know, I feel like it's not only a question of the rigor of your mind and the rigor of the way you're approaching these things, but it's also a question, for me, of aesthetics. I mean, the beauty of a work of art or even of a constitution is so much deeper when you have a sense of its origins. You know, like Robert Frost famously said that a word is a fossil poem. And, just the thing of vocation, you know, that's a word that we sort of throw around that we associate with training, or a vocational school is a school that trains people to do sort of sub-professional but above high school education kinds of job training. But the word voice is in there, you know, the word call is in that word. It comes, you know, a word comes bearing its history on its back. And contemporary literature, contemporary philosophy, contemporary politics, as you say, it all comes bearing the history of the thought that preceded it on its back, even when the writers didn't necessarily read all of those books themselves.
Exactly.
All the way back.
And it's also, I mean, there's a... I notice in particularly television news, but you know, radio news too, and in the paper, how many levels of remove the commentary is about the issue. And so, for example, we're talking about what pundits are saying.
Mm-hmm.
So pundits are commenting on the bill, and other pundits are commenting on other pundits.
Pretty
soon, you really get very far away from the idea that they want to do uranium mining in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. There's a level of abstraction from what we all know. What's absolutely obvious to all of us, which is that. Like another example, I went to graduate school at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. So a lot of my friends are writers. And, you know, all the creative writers I know are famously happy to have opinions about other writers whose work they kind of know. Who they sort, you know, they skimmed, they read a review, they read an interview. And you know, I'm as guilty of it as anybody else, of sort of having an opinion before I really have a right to an opinion. But it amazes me how often people will fervently defend their right to maintain the opinion, even while admitting that they hadn't read the book.
Right.
I mean, there was I don't know if you remember the big scandal over Jonathan Franzen's behavior when the corrections came out, and whether he had, you know, whether he had spoken poorly about Oprah. And it spilled over into a whole lot of conversations that I had with people about his work, and I just want to pause any number of these conversations and say, I'm not saying that you have to read this book, but don't you think that there ought to be a caveat over your opinion of his work,
if you
given that you haven't read it? Like, I'm not saying we all ought to be. I guess what my central point is that St. John's encourages a kind of modesty in the face of vigorous learning and study. And when I meet somebody who really knows a person's work, I try very hard, if I can, I mean, I hope I do this, to stop and listen to them before I, you know, enforce my own point of view on a conversation.
Salvador Cibona is author of the book The End. He is an award-winning fiction writer, St. John's graduate, and unfortunately it's time to go, but it's been great talking with you.
Oh, likewise. Thanks for having me on the show.
We're going to take a break, and Rob DeWalt will be here in just a moment. Please stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome to the program Rob DeWalt. He is with the Pasatiempo, Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's with us every Friday speaking of the arts. Bienvenido.
Good morning.
Good morning. So what is going on? How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little tired. I have a rain barrel outside my window, and it was dripping all night. So
excellent.
I was up early, and early, and then early again, and then early, and then almost was late to be here. But I'm here. So
you are indeed.
Yay!
Here.
Well, there's tons of stuff going on this weekend. This is Spanish Market Weekend,
yes,
and
it is.
Contemporary Hispanic Market Weekend. So
we did a show on Spanish Market, but we didn't do one on Contemporary Hispanic Market. The Spanish Market is traditional arts using traditional materials of northern New Mexico and environs. And what's Contemporary?
Well, Contemporary Hispanic Market is celebrating their 25th anniversary this year. And I think it's Saturday, July 30th and Sunday, July 31st on Lincoln Avenue. I believe it's 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. They are going to have all of their booths set up.
So it's basically just around the corner.
Just around the corner.
It's happening. You might not know when you've left one and entered the other.
Yeah. I mean, of course, traditional Spanish Market, it's 60 years old this year. There's a lot of events sort of around it. You know, there's events at the Spanish Table, and there's dance, and there's live music and all this stuff, and sort of separate... But I think equal now in popularity is the Contemporary Hispanic Market, which is over there on Lincoln Avenue. And they're in terms of the events surrounding the actual market itself are fairly limited, but the number of artists and the kind of work that's being shown it's a great contrast. So they're also releasing a book this year, Contemporary Hispanic Market 25 Years, which is showcasing 87 artists that have been involved in the market over the past like 25 years. And there's going to be, I believe, from 5:30 to 8 p.m. At the Community Convention Center, there's going to be a free preview reception and market award ceremony in the Lamy and Peralta halls over there. So that event is today. And you can find out more in the Pasatiempo about both markets. There's some great articles about some artists that are featured in the Spanish Market this year.
Excellent.
And both, I think, Contemporary Hispanic and Spanish Market artists are represented.
Santa Fe Concert Association 75th season opens this weekend with a special festival of song on Sunday at 4 o'clock, mezzo-soprano Isabel Leonard with pianist Joe Illich. And on Tuesday, bass baritone Daniel Okulich with pianist and composers Glenn Roven, Joe Illich, and Ricky Ian. Sunday, August 7th, we'll get to that next weekend. But anyway, lots of good stuff. You can go to Tickets Santa Fe, call 988-1234, Santa Fe Concert Association. And let's not forget Santa Fe Chamber Music. There's amazing stuff going on there. I want to go to every single one of them, but I'm going to three.
You're going to three? You've already picked them out?
Yep.
You've already, like, scheduled them and everything?
Yes, they're in my calendar.
You are so much more together than I am.
I would not say that.
Do you have a day planner?
No, I just have a calendar.
Oh, like
pages.
A digital calendar or
no,
a real thing?
Just a piece of, a bound plastic spiral.
I have a day planner. I have an email calendar. And then I have, like, three different calendars on my iPhone, and I'm still a mess.
Well, that's because you have more than one
many.
Calendar.
I have things spread out.
You just
like
need one calendar,
yeah,
a piece of paper with a spiral binding.
Yeah.
I've had the same one for 8 years, and it works.
It's the new too much information. That's
right.
What it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's technology is killing my social life.
Anyway,
Over the Rhine, this is a great group from Ohio. It's a duo. And they, let's see, they have a record out, The Long Surrender, which came out this year, and they are going to be performing at Soul Santa Fe Stage and Grill on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. It's kind of a mix of, like, gospel and alt country and blues and jazz and indie folk, and but I believe it's their second time here in the last couple of years, and they're gaining popularity, but they've been at it for 20 years. I would recommend that show definitely. Also, Creativity for Peace is having their sort of awareness thing that they do every year this year. And this year they're doing something different. They're doing a dinner. And it is, let's see, what is it called this year? Oh, Feast for Peace, a cultural celebration of the Middle East. And it's let's see, it's 5:30 p.m. Tuesday, at August 2nd. Tuesday, August 2nd. There's going to be all kinds of great. It takes place at the Santa Fe Women's Club, over there on Old Pecos Trail. If you go to the Creativity for Peace website, you can find out more information about tickets. But it's pretty much $15 at the door, so they're asking for cash and checks only, which I think is a good idea. But there's going to be food. I mean, tons of people are donating food. Cleopatra Cafe, Jumbo Cafe, Nile Cafe, Adobo Catering, Chef Emily Swantner, Nuf Al-Qasimi, who is with Santa Fe Slow Food. There's going to be Middle Eastern food. There's going to be all kinds of stuff. And there's going to be dancing, too.
Dancing is good.
And there's going to be some girls there, but they sort of have the option to sort of either be there or not because they're sort of, you know.
Some of the girls from Creativity for Peace.
Yes, some of the girls from Creativity Peace, which are girls from, you know, Palestinian
Israel,
girls.
And
Israeli
Arab
girls.
Israelis.
And some of them come here a bit fragile. And so this year, they're instead of like last year where they had people talking and all this other stuff, they're just kind of let the girls do what they want this year, which I appreciate. So that's happening. What else is happening? Sofa
West.
I'll
tell you. Oh, yeah. So we'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
Youth Shelters of Santa Fe,
yes,
are having a multi-generational art and poetry benefit featuring Joan Logie, Rodolfo Anaya, and Ford Ruthling. I can't read it very well, but and many others. It's July 31st, which I guess is Sunday. Enjoy food, drink, poetry, and artwork at Christ Church of Santa Fe, from 4:30 to 7:30, and admission is free. Donations are gladly accepted, and it's all sales of the artwork all benefit youth shelters. And there seems like there's some great artwork there.
Yeah, yeah. Now, can I talk about Sofa West?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's the third annual Western U.S. edition of the International Sculpture, Objects, and Functional Art Fair.
Sofa.
Yes, Sofa. That's what it stands for. And it's happening at the Santa Fe Community Convention Center. And this year they have this this part of the opening is the Intuit Show of Folk and Outsider Art, which I'm really stoked about.
Me too.
Because on the website you can go, there's a little section for the press or whatever, but you can see a lot of samples of the work, and it's fairly interesting stuff, and it spans generations. And this one tends to get a little bit bigger over year after year. But there's a lot of people participating. Chicago galleries, California galleries, Texas galleries, St. Louis, Missouri galleries, and, you know, folks from here.
We're going to have a couple of artists and one art dealer from SoFo West on the show on Monday.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I mean,
and
that's
wonderful, wonderful, wonderful art. I went last year. And the year before, expecting, oh, you know, a lot of gallery art, whatever. It was fantastic.
Yeah,
just
you know, I did the same
mind
thing.
Blowing.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I was like, oh, another one, not another one. And I showed up, and it was mind-blowing.
And if you're even remotely a creative person in any way and you want to just get inspired, you just go and take it all in.
Yeah. Some of the most interesting stuff are the sort of woodblock prints, the stuff that I looked at online. So I can't wait to see it all up in real in person. So if you go to the Sofa West website, you can find out more information about getting in and all that good
sofaexpo.com,
stuff. Sofaexpo.com. Sofaexpo.com.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And tickets are available online. So, and they're beginning at 5 p.m., I believe, on...
There's a preview on Wednesday
that's
that starts, that's open to the public at 7 in the evening.
That's
and
right.
Then it's Thursday, Friday. Was it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And tickets at the door, you can get tickets at the door beginning at 5 p.m., I think, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Excellent.
So.
And it's open from noon to?
Noon to.
Something.
Anyway,
you can go to their website for more information, but definitely a good thing to do.
Yeah. No, I can't wait for that. What else is happening? But there's a lot of gallery openings in and around Santa Fe also. Addison Row Fine Art on Marcy Street, right up the street from us, is having a show. Suspended Movement, The Female Form in Clay, Sculpture and Bronzes by Michael Young. And there's a reception tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. The Allen Galleries in the Rail Yard, John Kiley, Inclinations, Glass Sculpture, and Ronnie Landfield, Beyond Color Field. Paintings. There's a reception from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. tonight, and that's up through September 11th. Should also mention in the Rail Yard that Junction, the new restaurant, is open. I believe they opened last week.
Is that where the Rail Yard restaurant
is? That's where the Rail Yard restaurant and saloon is. And this is run by the folks who brought us the Catamount. But it is not the Catamount. There are it's the menu's different. Megan Tucker, who's the chef over at Amavi, is sort of in charge of the food over at Junction. And I haven't tried the food yet. I went in for a really nice sort of watermelon, cucumber, vodka-y thingy, and it was actually very good.
It was a beverage.
Cocktails. It was a beverage.
When you start out with watermelon cucumber, I was thinking salad.
No.
No, none of that.
No, I don't like watermelon. I like watermelon juice, but I don't like watermelon.
Ah.
I don't like the texture.
Ah.
It's like eating a suitcase.
Oh, no, it isn't. It's like eating a delicious... wonderful, refreshing watermelon.
Maybe I'm just eating it wrong. You eat the green part, right?
Not that you know of.
Okay. Actually, they do make watermelon rind pickles, which are just drop-dead delicious.
Well, you're the pickle man.
Yeah, I'm the pickle guy. You already mentioned the Santa Fe Chamber Music Festival. The Desert Chorale continues with great cathedral music. The Spirit Soars. And that is 8 p.m. at Cathedral Basilica of St. Francis of Assisi tonight. And there's student discounts available. If you go to desertchorale.org, you can get information. If you go to ticketsantafe.org, you can get tickets.
And the Opera Voltsek opens tomorrow night at the Santa Fe Opera.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, it does.
Are you going?
Yes. It's the fifth one that I've been to. I went to The Last Savage twice because I saw the dress rehearsal before we interviewed the director, Ned Canty. Okay, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to have a classic opera experience, go to La Boheme. If you want to have a contemporary art experience with Baroque music, go to Griselda. If you want to have fun and laugh out loud, go to The Last Savage.
Yeah.
It is so much fun. It's the most brilliant production I've ever seen. So good.
I was debating this in my own head and my mother, because my mother is moving here tomorrow.
Yay!
And we're going to go to the opera together, and we were trying to figure out what do we want to see. And she kept saying that Last Savage looks good. And I was like, well, it's not really traditional.
No, it's not traditional. A lot of people have been saying, oh, it's almost a musical.
Yeah.
But guess what? That's all right.
That's fine. You know.
It's not as good as the Book of Mormon, but.
Haven't seen it.
Haven't seen it.
Maybe they'll bring it to Santa Fe Opera next year. Somebody mount a production.
The Book of Mormon is not going off Broadway anytime soon because
they're
making way too much money. I think the cheapest ticket price you can get is over $100 ticket to go to the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
I did buy the soundtrack and have listened to it approximately 50 times. And it's really, really good.
I have to borrow it. I have to hear it.
Yes, you do.
Because if I want a copy, I'll go out and buy it.
And we didn't mention Faust. Faust is also a wonderful production and great music.
Yeah.
I've become kind of an opera fan. despite my efforts.
Well, Desiree Mays has mesmerized you. She's put her opera spell on you, and it's finally stuck.
It's like
a wet noodle.
I'm going to rerun the opera series in a couple of weeks, too, because every August they start doing a different opera every night.
Yeah.
And in one of those weeks, I play the opera series again on the corresponding days that they're doing the operas that night.
Oh, that's wise. Because
wisdom is what we
speak. Yeah, not a lot of people are like, well, I'll just go and hear the podcast. Not a lot of people do that.
No, some do, not
some
that
do.
Many.
No, I do. My mom does.
Excellent.
Let's see, what else is happening here? Oh, the 6th Annual New Mexico Jazz Festival. We've got that going on this
week. In
case
there's not enough music here for you already.
Exactly. And I want people to check out this show. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but Daedalus, which is D-A-E-D-E-L.
Daedalus.
Daedalus. But it's spelled just slightly different than the Daedalus. But have you ever seen this guy?
Mm-mm.
He's awesome. He uses a manome, which is sort of a box. It's a box that's sort of got some open source software on it, and it's a square with buttons on it, and you create music. But this, it's a lot deeper than I'm making it sound. But this guy's been to Santa Fe before, and he's coming back. He loves his Victorian clothes. He likes to sweat a lot. He gets the crowd moving. Local DJs Satva and Gargamel are going to open. That's at 7 p.m. tonight at Santa Fe Soul Stage and Grill. And advance tickets. I don't know if there's still any advance tickets, but if you go to soulsantafelive.com, you can get tickets.
Excellent.
And I'm sure you can get some at the door, too. If there's room.
If there's room. Now, don't forget Santa Fe Bandstand. What's happening with that?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I had it all marked here. Let's see. Of course, I'm not going to be able to find it. Here it is. Monday. Santa Fe Bandstand Summer Concert Series. We've got the Bootleg Prophets at noon, and that's on Monday. And then Monday night, we've got Jennifer Peterson and Creekstone, followed by local treasure, Bill Hearn, and his Roadhouse Review.
Yay!
And that's at 6 p.m. on the plaza. Bring an umbrella. Just bring an umbrella.
Yeah, just make it rain by bringing an umbrella.
Yeah. Yeah, don't poke anybody's eye out with it. Don't use it as a sword.
Correct.
Just bring it and use it. To block yourself from the sun and the rain.
Have you been to Renaissance fairs lately?
Yes.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I can't wait. There's one in September at the Las Golondrinas. Do you want to go?
Sure.
We can dress up?
Okay. I'll dress up as Rob DeWalt.
Okay. I'll dress up as Mary Charlotte. I have the perfect dress.
Uh-oh.
All right. On Tuesday, a Santa Fe Bandstand Summer Concert, alt-country band Joe West and Friends, followed by Paula Nelson. That's Willie Nelson's daughter, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. And that's at
Willie Nelson's going to be here in September.
In September?
At the opera.
Maybe he's already here.
That's true.
Oh, he's coming to the opera?
Yeah, he's doing a big benefit for, I believe, the Santa Fe Watershed Association.
I saw David Byrne at the opera. It was great. Well, I didn't really see him. He was really, really far away. But I heard him, and he sounded good.
That's even better.
Right. And so that's the Tuesday festivities. And then let me skip ahead, right? We've got Wednesday, the McLaughlins, followed by Blue Heaven Jazz Band, and that's at noon. And then... we've got Valle Español de Santa Fe, followed by Los Pincos, Latin Quintet. That's 6 p.m. on the plaza. God, there's just so much music. I don't really know. Oh, and then Thursday, of course, 6 o'clock, Jimmy Stadler Rock Band, followed by Alt Rockers Cracker.
Cracker.
Yeah, and that's on Thursday. So that's your bandstand roundup. This thing only has a few weeks left in it, so if you guys haven't been down there, you better skedaddle. Yeah, because there's not much time left. And I believe if you go to Inside Out Productions website and Santa Fe Bandstand.org, I think also is somewhere you can find out the schedule. Doc Watson versus the Vampires. This is the final weekend of Robert Naughton, Matt Sanford's comedy.
Yes.
Over there at Warehouse 21. I was supposed to go tonight, but I have other stuff going on, so I'm going to try and make it tomorrow. But it's the last weekend. It's at Warehouse 21. I'm hearing good things about it. It's a Robert Knott and Matt Sanford play, so you know there's going to be lots of pratfalls and there's going to be some adult innuendo that maybe they're asking kids that are sort of under 13 not to go.
Yeah. Adult innuendo that's so goofball that it becomes a family show, in yeah. my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I think they're just being sensitive, you know.
Yeah, because children under 13 have never been exposed to any adult innuendo.
No, never.
Because they don't watch South Park.
No. Or the news.
or the news.
This is one of the things that I'm in a food mood today. Well, there's two things. The first is the Spanish Table. This is sort of part of Spanish Market, but there's going to be a sausage sampling and a lecture on curing sausage by Robert Fettig and music by flamenco guitarist Joaquin Gallegos at noon on today. I believe that's today. I might have to go over there and get some free sausage.
Excellent.
But I also wanted to talk about the Green Gala, which I believe is tonight.
That's tonight,
that's
right.
Tonight. Gross Santa Fe Community College Foundation is celebrating the green building trend. There's going to be entertainment by Wise Fool, music by Lumber Dead Soul Trio, Phoenix Avalon, and Rich Janis. There's going to be locally grown food. There's going to be awards and demonstrations. This is at the Trades and Advanced Technology Center, which is this great, great building.
Great big building,
yeah,
with lots of green stuff going on.
Gosh, that chai smells good. If you can find out more information by calling 428-1175, or just show up. And that's from 5 to 8 p.m. tonight over there at the Santa Fe Community College.
The part where he said, gosh, that chai smells good, that's not related to the Green Gala.
Right. Okay. No, it's a stream of consciousness thing. It's related to the
hot beverage sitting on my table.
The
here
lack
in
of
the Santa
sleep.
Fe Baking Company.
That's right. New art. I don't know whose art it is, but...
It doesn't say.
It doesn't say.
All right.
But it's nice. Anyway.
It is nice. A lot of abstract...
Yeah.
A lot of abstract art.
There's tons of theater going on. There's... there's the Chicago Santa Fe Performing Arts Teen Ensemble is presenting the musical at the Armory for the Arts. This is also the final weekend for that. If you call the box office at 984-1370, you can find out show times. The Wizard of Oz, Pandemonium Productions, Pandemonium Players present the musical at the James A. Little Theater. There's a performance tonight at 7 p.m. This is the final weekend for that. If you call 982-3327, you can find more dates. And, golly, Busy McCarroll and the Ambassadors of Pleasure are playing out at the Santa Fe Performance Exchange in El Dorado on Saturday night. And, gosh, there's all kinds of just great music, local and visiting, as always. You know, everyone is mourning the death of Corazon, and it is really sad.
It is indeed.
That place is gone. But just because it's gone doesn't mean you sit at home and lament the fact that it's gone. You have to get out there and go to places and watch music and also... Tell the people, the managers and the owners and the bookers, people that are booking the bands, that what kind of music you would like to see. Because unless you say that, complaining at home isn't going to do anything to help the situation.
That is so true.
I know everyone gets tired of seeing the same bands in the same bar on the same night, week after week after week after week. But you know what? They're steady gigs and people love them. So if people want the music scene to be as vibrant as it was when Corazon was around, you got to speak up.
Excellent.
Anyway,
good point.
That's my preaching for the day.
Monday, August 11th, yeah. At the Lensic, an evening with New York's brightest young stars, presented by Stars Never Fade Productions and Ellie Dane, soprano, and Spencer Meyer, pianist, featuring operatic arias of the music of Franz Liszt.
Ah.
Who knew?
Who knew? On Saturday, Celebrity Legends in Drag, Star Search. This is your chance, folks. This is your chance. Toolbox Cabaret performers audition of new talent. There's going to be an audition of new drag talent at 8:30 p.m. at the Silver Starlight Lounge over there at Rainbow Vision Santa Fe on Rodeo Road. It's 8:30 p.m. on Saturday. And then also on Saturday is the Kim Mackey Show and Spanish Mustang Foundation Benefit Barbecue. An art exhibit, barbecue, and horse demonstrations. This is out at... Lanham Ranch, which is at 11 Arroyo Hondo Trail, starts at 6 p.m. There's a suggested donation. And let's see, there's going to be an auction. A portion of the proceeds benefits the Spanish Mustang Foundation. So keeping in tune with Spanish Market, we've got Spanish Mustangs, and it's for a good cause. And you know, I like barbecue.
Barbecue is good.
I like barbecue. Barbecue is good. Have you ever been to Sugar's Barbecue?
No.
In Embuto?
No, I have not.
It's awesome.
Have you ever been to the Sugar Nymphs Cafe?
You know what? We were going to go to Sugar Nymphs, but we didn't.
It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's. It's been a while. I have been up there, but you know, I was up at Ojo Caliente last weekend and wanted to stop at Sugar's because everyone had told me so much about it. I'd never stopped before, and I'm a barbecue whore.
Whatever you got to do.
Yeah. So, what else is happening, Mary Charlotte? We've got Charlie Christian, Electrifying Swing, the Charlie Christian Project with trumpeter Bobby Shue, drummer Cal Haynes. Let's see, bassist Michael Patton and guitarist Michael Anthony are performing at 4 p.m. on Sunday at the Santa Fe Center for Spiritual Living on Camino de los Marques. Tickets are at the door. Call 989-1088 to find out more information about that show.
And I just got an announcement right now, an email, Santa Fe Artist Market every Saturday from 8 to 2 across from the Farmer's Market right by Site Santa Fe.
Oh, yes. Yes. That market seems to get bigger every year. Is that just during market? Is that just during the
Farmer's market?
Market?
I don't know.
You don't know?
It's, well, 8 to 2, is that? No, because the Farmer's
market is,
ends at noon.
Yeah.
Which is why I never go, because I'm not up in time.
So if they had the Farmer's Market on Fridays...
Yeah, that's true.
If they could just move everything around to Friday for you.
Yeah, just moving so I can go right after the show. That'd be good.
That'd be awesome. Thanks. Thanks for doing that. rapper Abstract Rude is going to be out at Santa Fe Soul Stage and Grill on Thursday at 7 p.m. Tickets are available through ticketssantafe.org. And they're doing a lot of all-ages shows out there, which I think is fantastic.
Hey, let's not forget about movies.
Movies.
You know what?
Last
week we were talking about the movie Beginners, and I forgot to mention that one of the main characters in that movie is a Jack Russell Terrier. And he really is one of the main characters in the movie. He has a name, he has lines, he has subtitles that explain what he's saying. That makes it all in itself a really good movie. I don't know if it's still playing.
What movie is this?
Beginners. The
Oh, the Christopher Plummer.
Christopher Plummer movie.
Yeah, it's still running.
Okay. Well, if you like small dogs, you should go just for that.
Yeah. Well, what have we got? We've got Cowboys and Aliens this weekend. We've got The Names of Love, which is...
Well...
Where's that? Oh, The Names of Love is playing at the Screen. Rejoice and Shout, which is this great gospel music doc, is... at CCA Cinematheque, Laurel Gladden reviewed it in today's Positivo.
Oh, good. And on Sunday at 11 o'clock, CCA Performance Series in high definition, Bizet's Carmen.
Yes. Oh, yes, that's true. Yes. I think that's all that's opening. The Smurfs.
And, of course, Buck is playing four times a day from now until the end of time. But it's a good movie.
But it's a really good movie.
It's time to go. Buck is, by the way, playing at the CCA. We didn't get to the Screen, but ladies and gentlemen, always check out the Screen because they have wonderful movies there. That's on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Rob DeWalt is with us every Friday just about speaking of the arts. And he is with the Positempo, Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe New Mexican. And we are streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. My email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. After that, Jazz a la Carta with Ricardo Perez and Helga Ancona during the middle Brazilian hour from 10 to 11. That's a mouthful.
Yeah. That was a mouthful.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, they're reopening the Pecos National Forest. So if you want to go out, you can go out. Make sure you call and figure out when.
And
first.
Keep praying for rain.
Yeah. Yeah. Except during Spanish Market. And
contemporary
Hispanic Market.
Right. Well, have a great weekend, Rob DeWalt. And
you
have
too?
A great weekend, all of our listeners out in Radio Land.
Yay.
Bye.
Bye.